Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Dr. Cynthia Collins, our mutual friend Reese Patterson. And we all want this to be the best year ever for all our friends and family and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever. Good morning, folks. What a great show today, a show that can literally change your life, change your thinking, change your perception of good health. We have with us today the always fabulous Dr. Cynthia Collins, PhD, RD, CSO, health psychologist, and she will be interviewing the 92 years young Reese Patterson, a miraculous cancer survivor whose story will amaze, fascinate, and inspire you to improve your health and your life.
The role of exercise in your daily routine cannot be understated or undervalued. You must listen to your body and actively participate in your health. Change your way of life, be positive, happy, and live longer. Yes, folks, today is about the ageless way to get health, and there's no one I know that is more ageless than Reese Patterson. Reese, just why don't you say good morning to the folks, and then we'll immediately go to Dr. Cynthia Collins.
George, good morning. It's good to hear your voice again, and it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you so much for being here. You truly are an amazing inspiration. Dr. Collins, welcome back to the show. You are one of our favorite guests. You are an endless pit of information and inspiration. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Joyce, and good morning to both of you.
And since you are the one who introduced me and our listeners to Reese Patterson, why don't you just take over and you handle the interview? And I just want to share, folks, I'm someone who believes in miracles, and I certainly believe in making a difference to people one person at a time. And when I found out that on Dr. Collins' bucket list was to be a radio show interviewer, I had to step out of the way and let her take over an interview, so I know that I was responsible for crossing at least one thing off the Dr. Collins bucket list.
Thank you for that, Joyce. Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you for being with us. And that is
good
true.
Morning.
I'm so happy to have my bucket list one item completely fulfilled at this point. Thank you to Joyce for that. Good morning, Dr. Patterson.
Good morning.
I'd like to say just quickly as an introduction what prompted this interview. I was very fortunate to have the experience of having Dr. Patterson as a mentor of mine, excuse me, when I was in training for psychology, specifically psycho-oncology. And he's amazing because he has an ongoing remarkable recovery from a total gastrectomy and a partial esophagectomy for stomach cancer. And later on, you know, I'm sure that we'll hear more of his story. I hope that we will. Today's interview for me was prompted by an article that was published in the journal Oncology in October of 2017 entitled Initiating Exercise Interventions to Promote Wellness in Cancer Patients and Survivors. So what we hope to cover today is not only cancer survivorship and some of the concepts and some of the aspects of being able to have ongoing survivorship, but then specifically also some of the aspects of exercise. And Dr. Patterson will share with us how exercise has played a role in his ongoing survivorship for so many years. Maybe a quick definition from you, Dr. Patterson, your own definition of survivorship from cancer?
Yes. You and I have talked about this for years, Dr. Collins. I think that the one thing that I bring to the show is 31 years of survivorship, because 31 years ago, when my massive surgery, stomach was removed, had spread to the abdominal cavity, and they gave me 1 year to live, and I've been an exercise fanatic, and intuitively, I began to fall back on exercise as not only a way of trying to survive, but exercise improves the mood of all of us, especially if we're sick. It gives us hope. It can improve the quality of life. And it lessens the weakness and the fatigue that goes with any type of illness as serious as cancer. So, yes, I feel that exercise was indeed a major factor in my survival and my ongoing survival. And I'm just an exercise fanatic now, and I just believe so much in it. I think, Dr. Collins, you and I have talked about, and I'm sure you'll mention it, the pivotal article in Time Magazine cover story of September the 12th, 2016, and the title was The Exercise Cure. And without a doubt, it's one of the most excellent research articles summary of the benefits of exercise in our general health, and the role of exercise in dealing with health problems like cancer, and, of course, the role of exercise in our longevity. I think there's no question it adds years to our lives, along with good habits and so forth. But I'm a great believer in the role of exercise in general, but specifically for us, the cancer patients.
Thank you. What I'm very interested in, you mentioned a moment ago that you intuitively followed your need for exercise, and as you say, you've become a fanatic. With survivorship, according to the National Institute of Health, begins on the very day of diagnosis. So I find the fact that you already had an intuitive need for exercise, as many of the patients that I speak to now do, to be very important. And I hope those who are listening will obtain the article you mentioned, the Time Magazine cover article, The Exercise Cure, because it's very readable and very motivating to read as well. Can you speak a little bit more about how you knew right away to exercise for cancer?
You mean the types of exercise?
Well, actually, how you intuitively knew that as you were recovering from surgery, I believe, you knew that you needed to get moving, get going, even though you weren't feeling very much like exercising at that time.
Well, it was critical. I lost, you know, 30 or 40 pounds, and I, for a while, retreated to the bedroom, and my tennis doubles partner finally pulled me out and got me back out on the tennis court. And that's another story. But he almost died from Wegener syndrome. And I pulled him out of the bedroom with exercise and back on the tennis court. And in the next several years, we went on to win 3 national championships in tennis. So that we both became a believer in the vehicle of exercise with any kind of a health problem. And as time has gone on, I'm more and more convinced of the importance of this. And I think, just as you said, intuitively, I realized that it was improving the quality of life for me. I had some hope. And finally, I quit worrying about dying. I just got out there and exercised. And for me, the one that appealed the most was several hours of tennis a day. And Stan, my doubles partner, and I traveled all over the country. And then later, after he died, I traveled all over the Middle East and Mediterranean and England, Western Europe, playing in tournaments. And there I bumped into another gastrectomy patient, became great friends with him, and he and I played singles and doubles in all the tournaments over there for about 10 years. So we shared what we had learned about exercise and the wonderful option of tennis to get us out there and moving, moving and moving. But for every patient, I think the basic thing is be sure to keep walking, whether in your home or out on the street. And it depends a great deal on your age and physical conditioning, but keep walking, keep moving, again, according to your physical condition and what the cancer may have handicapped you in some way. But I cannot emphasize that too much.
Well, excuse me for interrupting here, Dr. Collins, but I have to ask you, Reese, is that gentleman that was your tennis partner, is he still alive today?
He died about in 2009, and he was a great friend. As a matter of fact, he was supposed to marry the Queen's younger sister, the Princess Margaret. But anyway, he died, and it's a long story. But he and I were able to help each other with an energy drink that enabled us to play 4 or 5 hours of tennis a day, because without a stomach, you cannot eat enough to last more than an hour or two. But I had an energy drink I put together that he and I would drink throughout our matches. In fact, our opponents used to accuse us of having some sort of a secret drug in there, that like cortisone or amphetamine. I said, no, we don't have a stomach. It's pure calories that's loaded with protein, carbohydrate, and that enabled us to maintain a blood sugar, and that in turn increased our stamina on the tennis court. So that was another story that the sports writers had a field day with. I even got investigated by the U.S. Olympic Committee. They were convinced I had done something wrong with this drink. I said, no, I just don't have a stomach. I've got to drink this throughout a match. So they analyzed the drink and finally came up Well, the fact it's simply liquid protein and carbohydrate. I said, that's right. That's it. And it works.
And I
would urge
that
to a lot of cancer patients who are trying to put weight back on. Product out there that I use now, it's called Boost, B-O-O-S-T, Calorie Smart. And it has about 15 grams of protein, about 4 grams of sugar. But it's good and healthy and will elevate your energy level with whatever exercise you do. It's about a 6 or 8 ounce bottle, but something like that I think is very useful, and especially for us, the cancer patients who are trying to put on weight. That's an easy way to increase the calorie intake each day is with a drink like this, Boost Calorie Smart, they call it.
I just have one more question, and then I want to get back to Dr. Collins. What did you do before you retired professionally? And that partner in tennis, what did he do? I just want to get a little idea of your background. Hello?
Hello? I don't think she hears you.
No, I asked you, Reese. What did you do
professionally?
Oh, I thought
you asked him.
No, I said before you retired and your tennis partner, what did he do? I just want to get a little idea of your background.
Well, I was a traditional medical doctor that specialized in ophthalmology and eye surgery. And then in the Korean War out there, I was 2 years out there, and later went back to India and did cataract surgery in India for about a half a year. And then I came back and tried to, my mother said, please be traditional, come home. So I finally came home and did the traditional thing, but I was a eye surgeon, ophthalmologist, and so forth. And then that all was interrupted in 1987, 31 years ago, with a stomach cancer. And I was given really a very bad prognosis of maybe 1 year to live. So, yeah, that was my life before I was in medicine. And
your partner in tennis, what did he do?
Well, Stan Ford was a court reporter and a very analytical person, and he and I developed a tennis strategy that was remarkable that enabled us to beat players who were technically better players than we were. But he was extremely bright and outgoing. And the court reporter, and then he died in 1998. I've lost some good friends. But the tennis was very important for him and also for my friend Norman Lonsdale in London, England. And it just made a big difference for both of us on that.
And Stanford, when did he pass?
In 1998.
Wow.
1998, and then a year later, long story, but I bumped in contact with Norman Lonsdale in London, found out that he had the same cancer I had and the same surgery, and unfortunately they gave up on him and just said, you know, it spread, so there's no hope. Well, his wife, whom I had known 50 years earlier in the Philippines, called me and said, can we come over? And so he came over, and I said, my goodness, he's a good tennis player. Found out that he didn't have a clue about what to eat, what not to eat. And so I got him back on a schedule of exercise. And after that, we played for about 10 years together all over Europe and England and the Mediterranean. It's hard to believe all that happened.
And
but,
you're still going strong. God bless you. We got to get back to Dr. Collins for our interview.
Okay, thank you. Well, his story is so remarkable. I mean, and you touched Dr. Patterson on so many points that I want to touch on with you, but I want to bring them all into just maybe one statement. Tennis was a vehicle for your survival, and my hope is that all cancer patients can find their vehicle for their own survival. And I know that you we've spoken about a lot of aspects of that, of how they need to tailor their exercise according to their own needs and even speak with their doctor. But when you look at just the tennis, not just for exercise, but have a vehicle for hope and a vehicle that increased your quality of life, as you say, and got you to get your focus off the fear of dying, that's the aspect that I'd really like like to bring out now for some of the cancer patients who are listening. Can you speak more about that? Maybe about the illness as a woundedness, perhaps.
Okay. One thing that I learned early on, and that was that we cancer patients cannot be passive. We have to actively participate in our survival effort. And if we can do that, and maybe it takes some energy to go and some discipline, if we can do it and actively fight for our survival, the quality of our life is usually improved, and it may enhance the possibility of our living longer or even surviving. But all of us know there are no guarantees with anything. But I would urge fellow cancer patients to actively become involved in their survival effort, and part of that is exercise. The other part I would urge them to do is talk to your physician about your limitations as far as exercise, your age, your general physical shape. All of that will go into the decision about what type of exercise to do. But it is so important that you actively go out there and struggle and look at it in the way that the Chinese do with a symbol. They've got a symbol for crisis. And the two halves of the symbol with a pictograph, one half is danger and the other half is opportunity. And the Chinese feel that a crisis is both a positive and a negative. The negative is there is a danger. The positive is it may be an opportunity to change your life forever in a way that you never thought possible. And that's what I found out. I was able for the first time to realize that my physical and emotional survival should be always the number one priority in my life. And I've heard fellow cancer patients for this. And Dr. Collin, I've used this example many times before, but if you're in an airplane and the plane has trouble and the flight attendant comes back and the oxygen tank little bags come down, she will tell you, put your mask on first. Don't do other people first, like we often program by work ethic in society. Put yours on first, and then that enables you to go out and be of help to the other passengers to help them put their masks on. And this is something that really resonates with me, that so often we're programmed to take care of everybody out there and put ourselves last. We got it reversed. We should be fully informed and fulfilled before we can go out and be of service to others. That means our physical and emotional survival should be number one in the lives of all of us. And when I got cancer for the first time in my life, I began to put myself, my own survival, as number one priority in my life, which I had never done before.
So in the Chinese symbol for crisis, I think that speaks to exactly what I'm often seeing with patients, is that their focus is on the danger and the
yes.
fear, naturally so, but if they could move their focus to the opportunity. Is there something about old tapes or old patterns of thinking? Because I find that many people have a hard time breaking out of their usual way of being passive or their way of looking at negativity.
Well, that was... I was a traditional person that grew up in the depressions in the 30s and the 40s, and I was taught you must bend to the others, take care of everybody else first, and that's a very stressful way to live. And I began to ignore physical signs that I had some GI problems, pain in my chest when I swallowed and so forth, but like a typical arrogant male, I said, well, I'll just gut my way through this. It's not significant, but I was under a lot of stress, a busy, busy doctor, stressful. I booked ahead about 6 months to a year, and I just felt that the world could not do without me, a very arrogant attitude. But then, after I had my surgery and I came back to the office here and realized I couldn't work anymore, I said to the secretary, what are we going to do about the backlog of patients for 6, 8, 10 months I'm supposed to see? Oh, she said, Dr. Patterson, we have a system already in place that you helped set up. We've already got a replacement for you, and we're going right on as though nothing has happened.
No.
And I said, "You mean I'm not missed at all?" She said, "Well, yeah, we miss you, but the system you set up enables us to get a replacement here, another ophthalmologist very quickly, and those patients will all be taken care of." That was one of the most humbling moments of my life. I realized I really was expendable.
Wow. Well, that hurts. But it's true for everyone, and I hope everyone is listening who might be what I know you are familiar with, a type C personality, which we can speak to, because it's a lot of what you just described. And
exactly.
I have to tell you that I have adopted a term that I learned from you that goes part and parcel with what we're talking about. I use this term a lot when I'm speaking with patients, and it's the term responsibly selfish. Could you speak to the patients about how to be responsibly selfish?
Yes. As time went on, I began to realize that, indeed, the world could do without me, but that if I have a mission in life, it's going to be for the rest of my life working with fellow cancer patients and sharing with them what I've learned. And what I've found is the majority of cancer patients that I dealt with, Dr. Collins, they couldn't get out of that programming by society of putting the welfare of others first and yourself last. I give you a good example. I went to Dr. Carl Simonton's clinic in Santa Monica, California, about a year after my surgery, and I just felt I just needed some help, some guidance. And out there, he was very helpful about what cancer patient can do to survive. But a fellow cancer patient was there from Charlotte, North Carolina. I never forget him. He was an insurance salesman, but obviously full of energy, high pressure, workaholic. And he told me that, yes, he knew he had had a fatal illness, but now he's going to work harder than ever in order to buy more insurance so his three daughters would have more to live on and his wife after he died. And I said, "You mean you're working harder than before?" He said, "Oh, yes." His wife told me, "I can't slow him down. He's driven by this need to do for others and take care of others. And in the process, he just is stressing himself out," and he died about 6 months later. Because this was a person that might have survived had he begun to listen to his own needs of putting his physical, emotional survival, making that number one priority in his life. And I see this so often with fellow cancer patients. They have the trouble making the transition from suddenly feeling responsible for everything out there into turning it around and being responsible to their own survival in order to build a firm foundation from which then they can genuinely go out and be of help to others. But we have to survive as individuals before we can help others. Like the flight attendant said when the oxygen mask came down, put your mask on first, you survive, then you help the others.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lesson.
That's such a great analogy as well. And I might have a few patients listening who are trying to reconnect to their healthier self before diagnosis because they've had very difficult therapies. For example, one gentleman I know who might be listening used to play golf and is trying to reconnect to that. Another one who, a woman who has been a swimmer all of her life, trying to reconnect. Do you see anything about reconnecting to your previous healthier self as far as the exercise helping that, being a good vehicle for that?
You mean is the exercise still helping?
Does it help for a patient to start doing the activities they used to do so that they could feel healthy and give their body more of a live message now?
Absolutely. But here again, it depends on their age, their general physical conditioning, and that's where the doctors have to step in and guide them if there's any physical disability that needs to be taken care of. But, yes, you go back to whatever turns you on.
For me,
it's tennis. Other people, it may be walking or running or hiking or whatever, but you go back to a type of exercise that you enjoyed before. You may have to limit it or change it, but you can still participate in it in one degree or another. And that is the thing I've shared with so many patients. What did you enjoy before? What type of exercise? And I told them the story about Mark Twain, Mark Twain was asked that, and in around 1880, and they said, "Mr. Twain, what do you think about exercise?" "Oh," he said, "when that comes up, I go lie down for a while until that notion passes away." Well, that's a type of philosophy that I think too many people still embrace. But when you have an illness, it's even more important to include exercise in your routine, not once a week, not twice a week, but something every single day. And that's where walking is probably one of the best beginnings to get back into exercise when you have a disease like cancer. And then if you go on from that, you can get into a pulleys, on the elastic pulleys you can put on a doorknob and pull on them. Weightlifting, I wouldn't get into much more than 10 pounds unless you're much younger. But there are things you can do, both cardiovascular and also to strength ability. And one of the I like are these pulleys you put around a doorknob, and you can exercise up, down, backwards. And the beauty of that is that you control the stress of it by how close you stand to the doorknob. You can go way back and have the greater stress. Get closer to the doorknob, and you have less stress. But you can tailor it to your own individual needs. And that, I think, is so important to encourage patients. Some sort of exercise, you've got to get it back in your life.
Okay. I'd like to interject also. I'm looking at an assessment form here for strength. Some patients need to start out with even carrying in the groceries or emptying the dishwasher. They really have become that weak. And I think that you had illustrated for some patients when I was there even how to do a push-up on your kitchen table or a kitchen counter, like how
That's
you
right.
can utilize what's right there in your kitchen, you know, for strengthening yourself.
Absolutely. I used to do 100 push-ups on the floor a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then after my surgery, I found out that if I did too much of that, my incision might break open. So I had to modify it, and you modify it by getting the kitchen countertop is about 36 inches high. I do push-ups off the side of that, and it's not dangerous, and I get a good workout, and I do that for all of the things I used to do, I do in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing, the Australian study found that if you do any weightlifting as you get older, it's important mm-hmm. to lessen the total weight and increase the repetition. That way you're not going to hurt your body. One other thing, whatever the exercise is you're going to do, listen to your body. Your body
mm-hmm.
will tell you what it is comfortable with and when you've gone too far. Your
mm-hmm.
body can determine the degree every day that you do it, whether you're doing too much or not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your body.
Okay.
And that's where, again, your doctor can help you determine some of the physical ailments that you have that may have to be altered somewhat as far as your types of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very important, very important.
And I want to interject here that what is as important as listening to your body, or perhaps almost as important, is listening to our show every day with positive thinking and ways to inspire and motivate you with top-level authors and business leaders. And in the words of our health guru, Beverly Nadler, here's why.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce Barry and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we do ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and spelled out, joycebarryandfriends.com. And on the upper left of our homepage, you will see my picture. And if you look under the picture, the word follows. Simply by clicking on that word, you will get an email about every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of our special shows, because if you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern, know that all shows are archived. That's 8 years of this show. You'll see a show 5 days a week, all in our archives. You can listen to 24/7. And you can download the shows, you can send out the links. So I do invite you to become, join the thousands of followers to JoyceBarryAndFriends.com. A website I want to urge you to check out is www.creationbalance.com. Dr. Collins, tell them about why they should check out your website.
Well, my website, which is creationbalance.com, indicates how we're taking a triad, basically, a triad look for cancer patients as well as patients with other chronic illnesses. So we're doing a lot of interaction for stress management. That could be meditation, learning new coping techniques, dealing with relationships, and even dealing with the medical system, as well as nutrition. So I'm also a registered dietitian, and I analyze diets and help folks get on a good recommended way of eating that will enhance their health for whatever the condition is that they're dealing with, and a little bit of exercise too. And I often just call my exercise component movement, because I'm not an exercise trainer, but I'm helping individuals who really aren't used to doing any exercise or are not currently capable of doing their usual exercise to just get started again for some strength, flexibility, and some circulation. So all of that is shown on my website, and that's a great way to contact me through the website.
And Dr. Collins, I have to tell you, looking what's here in the studio or people who have called in, one would think you're a movie star. I must have 50 people on the line. So let's just take a few callers, and I'm doing that in the order that they called in. The first one, 561-271, Marlene, are you there? Marlene? Okay. Marlene is a silent listener. That's fine. I thought I would give it another shot. And the second one that called in is the next one we have here is, like I say, there's about 50 numbers on the board. Give me 1 second. I'm trying to keep it in the order. All right, let me see. 561-601. Name and where are you calling from? 561-601. Another silent. People are calling, and you can listen via the computer or the phone. Okay, 561-601 chooses not to speak as well. Let's go to 561-870. Name and where are you calling from? 561-870. Hello. Okay, you have silent listeners, 561-870. Normally 3 strikes and you're out, but I know we'll hit it right. 914-522, name and where are you calling from? 914-522. Dr. Collins, why don't you ask the next question while I try to find someone?
Okay. All right. So I think I have a lot of individuals who were in the silent listening mode. If they wanted to speak, they could press the number one, correct, in order to ask
yes,
a question?
Yes, but I'm calling on them anyway.
Okay.
I
see.
Without doing it. I'm doing that anyway to give them a chance. Sometimes people forget that. Number one means I want to speak, but as I said, there's so many. Let's see. Go to the next question.
Yeah, we can move along. Dr. Patterson,
yes.
I was wondering if you're familiar with the book Younger Next Year.
The book was what now?
It's called Younger Next Year, about exercise.
You know, I've heard about it. As a matter of fact, I've seen it and I've read the first few chapters of it. It is excellent. It's written by a doctor up there at Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm asking about that book in particular is that a lot of the patients we have here in South Florida are older individuals. And
yes.
What I liked about Younger Next Year that hit home for me was that the author spoke about the need to exercise actually more every decade, not less.
That's right.
But differently. And I think that's so important. I'm finding many people relentlessly complaining about other events going on, like arthritis and fibromyalgia and, you know, the other issues that they have in addition to the cancer, which
that's
I believe
right.
that they think keeps them from being a candidate for exercise. And I feel that it's so important to, like you're saying, just adapt the exercise to your body ability.
Well, your bodies are made for movement. And if you're young, you can get away for a while with it. But if you're old, you cannot get away if you don't move around because your body is made for movement on that. Can I mention one thing about stress, Dr. Collins?
Yes.
This comes up so often with cancer patients, and that is the role of stress in our lives and how it can affect our health, our happiness, and also may be a factor in diseases like cancer. There are two types of stress. There's positive stress and negative stress. The positive stress can be identified because we have control over it. Negative stress is stress that we do not have control over, and that's where we've got to look at it. If we can't solve it, then get help from outside, because negative stress can really make you sick in the process. But the control factor is the litmus test for that.
Well, I think the control factor is something that many patients express where they don't have control over the diagnosis.
That's
sometimes
right.
They don't have control over the medical environment because things get missed or it becomes very chaotic or their appointments are late, things like that. But I try to help them see and find what they do have control over and then take the control that they can. And you mentioned getting outside help. So that, for me, brings up the point of relationships and how important it is to be equal and balanced in the amount that we do for others as we do for ourselves, and how that affects even our self-image. Perhaps you could speak to that concept.
Well, that's right. I find that most cancer patients, they treat themselves like second-class citizens. They delegate everything to the doctors and the nurses, and they very passively do what they are told to do, and they don't ask any questions. I urge all cancer patients, become a member of the doctor-patient team, ask questions, insist on being fully informed, and above all, if you got a question about what's going on, don't hesitate to get a second opinion. That gives the patient the control that they really need for not only their self-image, but from the practical standpoint, sometimes a second opinion is very, very necessary to get the answers to the type of treatment that may be recommended. So I think they've got to aggressively take charge of their lives. And in many ways, Dr. Collins, many of the patients I talk to, they're taking charge of their lives in ways that they've never, ever done before. But having cancer suddenly relieve them of that responsibility of programming by society, help others before yourself, they begin to realize they have got to make this physical, emotional survival the number one priority. And that means insisting their doctors answer all their questions and become informed.
I have a question for either one of you. Is there such a thing as exercise paramount to prevention of cancer? is there such a thing for someone who doesn't have cancer and is looking to prevent it from happening to them?
You want me to answer that?
Sure, Dr. Patterson, go right ahead.
Okay,
you.
George, the thing about that is that you can't say specifically that exercise is going to prevent this cancer or that cancer. Exercise will promote good health for all of us, no question about that. And if we're sick, then it helps us deal with our illness. That's what we've been talking about. But, there are no guarantees with anything in life. We do know what is a good, healthy program for living, and that is exercise some every day. And the other thing is learn the importance of negative stress in our lives and do something about it. And if we do something about it, our self-image is going to be better and our health is going to be better, and we'll be coping better. So it's important that we treat ourselves like first-class citizens and insist that everybody else treats us the same way.
I want to go back to the board. Thank you for that. Because, as I said, we've got about 50 people that did call in. Let's see if we have better luck here. 561-889. I believe that's Sean. Would you like to say something or ask a question? Sean, 561-889. No, he's talking to someone else. He's not with us on the air. This never happened before. That many people, and I don't know what's going on. It must be in the stars. The next one, I just want to get a few that actually will talk. Let's see. 561-295. Your name and where are you calling from? 561-295. Are you there? 561-295. This never happened before. I've had one or two, but every single one I'm calling one is a silent partner. Yes, you do hit the number one when you want to be on the studio lines. That's true. But sometimes people just don't think to do that. Okay, I got to get one in here somehow. 561-676. These are people holding on a half hour to an hour. They're holding. Name and where are you calling from? 561-676. If I didn't witness this myself, I wouldn't believe it. We're batting 100. Okay, let's try one more. I never experienced this before. Truly, 561-642. Name and where are you calling from? Wow. Okay. We have all silent listeners today. That's mind-boggling. And yes, I do usually follow the one rule, but nobody had the number one on, so I took it to mean they just didn't think to do that. Back to you, Dr. Collins, keeping in mind we're starting to wind down to get in what you really want to cover.
Okay, thank you, Joyce. I did want to refer to something Dr. Patterson had mentioned a moment ago about the patient's right to get a second opinion. And most of our doctors, I find, are open to that. They actually welcome that the patients are fully knowledgeable about their diagnosis and about their treatment. So that isn't really usually a problem. I am aware of the fact that in one of the classic books I recommend, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, that issue was spoken about by Dr. Bernie Siegel. Are you familiar with that, Dr. Patterson?
Oh, yeah. I outlined his book.
Okay.
Well, I was going to ask you about, would you want to comment about the three categories of cancer patients that Dr. Bernie Siegel talks about in his book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles?
Yes, I'd love to include that. I think it's very important for the patients to hear about that.
Okay, you want to do it or shall I?
I would like you to do it, please.
Well, the three patients, and I found out in my last 31 years that he is right on target. You got three categories of cancer patients. The first group, we call them, they're the ones that really are just tired of living. And you can pick this up in the first 5 minutes of talking to them. Whatever their reasons are, they maybe their quality of life is not good. Maybe they're tired of living, but they don't want to make the effort to do anything. Well, that group has a very poor survival rate. The second group he calls are the passive patients. These are ones that they want to live, and they really are interested in getting the doctors going, but they don't bother asking any questions. They delegate everything to the doctors and nurses and in every direction, and they just it's like taking here's my body, take it to a garage, your car, and I'll pick my car up on Monday. That's what they want to do with the body. Give it to the hospital for over the weekend. I'll pick my body up on Monday, but don't bother me with the details. Now, their survival rate is better than the first one, but still not that good. The third group he calls the bad actors. Well, they're the ones that are just a pain in the neck to everybody. They ask so many questions, and they're very assertive in a very aggressive way. They insist on being part of the doctor-patient team, and they will often get a second opinion. But the interesting thing about that in his and Dr. Siegel's book is that the survival rate of that third group is much, much higher than the other two altogether. And that really is the whole point of his book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles. We patients have to be actually participants in our survival effort and insist on being treated like first-class people. Answer my questions, doctor. What are we going to do here? What about another opinion? Now, the second opinion is usually brought up by the patient. Rarely will the doctor bring it up. So we patients have to be assertive. If we feel we, for the peace of mind, that we want to have another opinion, speak up, and your doctor will probably help you do it.
And thank you much so much for sharing that. I would think if anything we've spoken about today would prompt some questions for the doctor today, and I really am inviting anyone who's listening, this is a great opportunity to ask a question to someone who is in medicine, who is a physician, as well as has the intimate experience of being a cancer patient and surviving so long, because taking participation in your own care and in your own journey is exactly what exercise is all about. And the beauty of that is that now even the oncology community is showing us with research why exercise is so important and how to go about doing exercise. And they're recommending it as part of survivorship, which begins on the first day of diagnosis. So I think it's so important to see yourself in that category of patients that Dr. Patterson just described as one that has the greatest chance for going into remission, staying in remission, and even though there are no guarantees, at least increasing and optimizing your quality of life while you are surviving.
Let me go back to Dr. Siegel for a moment. He's a regular on our show. So, folks, if you go to our archives, April 20th, as late as that, on his book, Peace, Love, and Healing, in our archives on April 20th. And if you go to the homepage of Joyce Barry and Friends.com, and in the search bar on the right, you type in Dr. Bernie Siegel, all his shows will come up. If you type in Dr. Cynthia Collins, all her shows will come up. If you type in Reese Patterson, his prior shows will come up. So the search bar on the upper right of our homepage, you will hear Dr. Bernie Siegel on his phenomenal book, Peace, Love, and Healing, and he'll be on our show again in the next couple of weeks. So I wanted to share that. You have done an extraordinary job today, Dr. Collins. You're always welcome on our show. And Reese, it's a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to having you for the next 10 years as well. 92 years young.
It's a pleasure. My pleasure.
So, Dr. Collins, what message would you like to leave our audience? I want to thank all the people who called in. I really do appreciate you called in and listened. Next time, it'd be wonderful if you actually say something.
Okay.
I would really appreciate that. Go ahead.
I think my final take-home message that I'd like to express is, well, of course, my gratitude for having the radio show, and also thank you so much for Dr. Patterson joining us and sharing from your direct experience, which is something you can't get very often. It's a very precious thing. I think what's so important here is that exercise, besides all the evidence now of what it can do for us, it's the patient's way to participate in their own survival. I think that's paramount. And because I'm interested in the psychology aspect as well, the earlier mentioned comment by Dr. Patterson that it improves mood and decreases anxiety and depression is another very important piece of that. And that's the final statement I think I'd like to leave with the listeners today.
And thank you so much. Again, you're awesome. You're one of the very, very few people I invited to be on our show each and every month. So, folks, you need to become a follower of our show, JoyceBarryAndFriends.com, clicking on follow on the upper left of the homepage, so you will not miss any of Dr. Collins' shows. You will be able to hear Reese Patterson again, because I will invite him back again. He's awesome. Reese, what message would you like to leave our audience with?
I think the strongest message I have, two of them, is look up this article in Time Magazine, 2006. It'll make a believer out of everybody in the value of exercise across the board. The second point I'd like to leave with the listeners is find other patients who are going through the same type of cancer. Share experiences with them. I have learned so much from hundreds of cancer patients over the last 31 years. I've learned so much. It's a reciprocal thing, back and forth. We're all down in the trenches together. We help each other. Find patients who are also going through what you are.
So, again, thank you so much for making the time and being here and sharing what you did to inspire and motivate people. I just want to share that in the last week, literally, I wanted to motivate myself to exercise. I'm one of the people like Mark Twain that think about it and it's always later and tomorrow. And I know I'm a motivational coach, and I'm very motivated with all of my accomplishments, being humble here. I'm one of the first women in the world to be a stockbroker, and the list goes on. But I've always had an issue with getting myself moving. I do go to physical therapy twice a week, and when I'm there, I do what they tell me. But when I'm back in my own place with my own time, it's always a book to read, something to watch, someone to talk to. So I wrote this poem to motivate myself. I was meditating, and it came to me, and I woke up from the meditation and put it all in writing, so let me share it with you all. It's called Start Small, Think Big. Start small, think big. Don't go zag when you should go zig. Stay on course, you'll reach your goal when it comes from your heart, when it comes from your soul. Now take the first step, you know what's best. Don't go east when you should go west. Keep on smiling, don't you frown. Always stay up, never get down. You are bright, you know what's right. For sure it's no mystery to stay in positivity. The choice is yours, time to begin. You don't want to lose, you want to win. Don't be like the one who blew it. Be the one that knows to just do it. Whatever you do, whatever your approach, get support, a mentor, a role model, a great life coach. Get out your journal, get out your pen, put in deadlines, and ask yourself, if not now, when? So I wrote that to inspire myself, and hopefully along the way it will inspire all of you. Again,
it's well
thank
said.
You,
well said, Joy. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Again, thank you, Reese. Thank you, Dr. Collins. You're both awesome people, and I want to close on the note of my special prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Folks, go out and make someone happy today. Do a random act of kindness. Support someone on their journey. And we invite you to sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us. We want to make you all happy. We appreciate you. Thank you for listening. And you can start that process of joy, happiness, and laughter right here, right now, to the Joy Barry Mesh. Thank you, and God bless you.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.